I really appreciate you guys tuning in. It means the world to me.
If you have a story that you'd like to share, the best way to get a hold of me is through email. My email is aliens, UFOs, and ghost stories at yahoo.com.
Whatsoever beings exist throughout all galaxies, it doesn't make any difference. You are all of them. And when they come into being, that's you come into being. You know that very well.
Hello and welcome back to Aliens, UFOs, and Ghost Stories. Today, I am honored to be having a conversation with Bill Konkoleski. And he is an author. He's also an experiencer, of course. He's the state director of the Michigan chapter of MUFON. For any of our brand new listeners, MUFON is the Mutual UFO Network. And we've had, of course, Ken Cherry on in the past. I'm not sure if you know Ken. He was the state director for Texas for some time, the whole entire state. We've also had Kathleen Martin on, of course, who, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't, you know, very much involved with MUFON, specifically in Florida.
Yeah, she's starting to pull back a little bit, but yeah, she was the head of the experiencer resource team for quite some time. And now she mostly keeps it local. She used to do presentations all over the place. I was always bumping into her everywhere, but not as much these days, but you know, her heart's still very much into the topic.
Oh yeah, of course. And for our new listeners, I know that there's new listeners every week, and I'm not sure why, but we seem to have a predominantly younger, I mean, I think your average podcast on the subject ranges from like 35 to 50 year old. For whatever reason, we're getting a lot of 25 through 35 year olds, which is pretty cool. A lot of younger people, I think, are starting to get into the subject. But for any of you guys who don't know, Kathleen Martin, of course, is the niece of Betty Hill. Betty and Barney Hill's story was one of the most incredible abduction stories of all time, really. I mean, that's at least how I feel about it. But I would like to talk about your books briefly, if that's okay.
Sure thing.
Okay. Yep. So there's two of them. There's Experiencer 2, Two Worlds Collide. You can find this on Amazon, Walmart, Barnes & Noble. Really, I mean, they're just about everywhere. And that's the second one, of course. I guess I should have read these in order. The other one is Experiencer. I just ordered these. I was really hoping to get them, but it's Amazon. I should have just bought them from Barnes & Nobles. But Experiencer, Raised in Two Worlds. So, you know, if you guys, you know, flick through Amazon, you can read, get a gist about what they're about, of course. I would highly recommend that you go and get them. I've listened to, I believe, 4 podcasts that you've been a guest on. Reading books, of course, and listening to podcasts, other previous interviews are a great way for me to gather information about my guests. But typically, Bill, what we do is, if it's all right, we like to kind of go chronologically. So I was hoping you could tell our listeners about your early on experiences.
Sure. And as you mentioned the books, I've had experiences all my life, and which I'm about to get into. The books, the way that they're broken apart is the first book, Raced in Two Worlds, is about my experiences up until age 20. At the time that I wrote it, there weren't a lot of books from a first-person perspective about being very young and having these types of experiences. And then the second book is roughly from about 20 to roughly about 25. And when I say that I had a lot of experiences when I was very young, my very first experience is age 2, my very first memory in life. I'm in a crib. It's dark. It's late. I'm not yet asleep. And a little gray being walks into the room, stares down over the crib at me. I scream for my parents. My mother calls back from the other room, go to sleep. And then after a couple moments, the thing walked out. I assume it was going to my brother's room. I'm not quite sure. And I have 4 older brothers. And it was something that burned into my memory the moment it happened. It wasn't something that came back to me years later. It happened, and I never forgot it. Age four, three little gray guys came into my room at 2 p.m. and pulled me out of body. As you know, I'm just telling it as it is. I know it sounds weird right out the gate. And they wanted to see how I functioned outside of my physical form. And they seemed satisfied and popped me back in. And age seven, that is an experience where I have a scar on my arm. I kind of glossed over the four-year-old one, but I think the seven-year-old one is interesting, told a little bit in detail. I was in bed. It was late, and I was going to bed. It was nighttime, and this black sort of opening appeared on the ceiling directly above me, and then out of it dropped this sort of metallic-looking cable, and it started whipping around really quickly, and I felt static charge. I felt energized, and then it was kind of bright for a moment, and then I was in a small room, and it had a curved wall on one side. At this point, I'm assuming I'm on board a UFO. Sort of that's a way of saying it in retrospect. At the time, I knew I was in a circular construct, a circular building or whatever. So two little gray guys are in there. The room has sort of a black light in it, and I got the impression that I was being cleaned somehow, like this was some sort of mud room that I had to go through to get in. And after they were satisfied, they let me into the next room. And in the center of the room, there was not much in this. It was very brightly lit, and there was sort of a slab of bed there. And I thought, oh, they want me to go on the bed. Something's going to happen to me on this bed. And as I walked in, now there's three of them, three little guys in the room, if I didn't mention that. And they seem to be talking amongst themselves telepathically. And then they all just left the room all at once. They went out this door to the left and left me in this room by myself. And that surprised me that they would leave me alone in there. And so since they went out through a door on the left, I went through a door on the right. And I walked, found myself in a long curving hallway, and I walked until I got to the end of the hallway, and there was a room like a closet, and inside was some sort of machinery. And so I'm like, okay, so this is a dead end. I'll walk back, because I did walk past several doors on my way to get to this end of the hallway. But when I turned around, I saw the three beings. They were following me. They seemed to just be interested, like, oh, okay, he's loose. Let's see where he goes. Let's see what he does. And so then when I turned back, they ushered me into this side room that I had passed. And inside, the guys that I was with were about 3 feet tall. And when we went into this next room, there was one of them looked just like him, but he was 5 feet tall. And in the room is... the closest approximation I can get is like a dentist's chair. And so he has me sit in a chair. I do. And I felt magnetically attached to the chair. There weren't any straps or anything, but I couldn't lift myself out of it. And the being gets in my face. He's got these big, giant black eyes, gets right in my face and says, "Be really good and you'll get to see the color blue." And I'm like, you know, kids like stickers and suckers and whatever. I get to see the color blue as my reward for a good doctor's visit. Okay, it's strange. And then I felt a really sharp pain on my right arm. And I looked down and I saw my arm had been sliced. And as I'm looking at it, it's healing as I'm watching it. And it no longer hurts. And then it sort of has this sort of scarred up appearance. And so I look back at him like, you know, what the heck just happened? And his face is right in mine again. And his eyes changed from black to a bright blue. And it was very cosmic. It was like this cerulean blue. And I just felt pounded by these waves of tranquility, peace. It was a very sort of positive, effect on me. And then the next thing I knew, I woke up the next morning and I look and there's this scar on my arm that wasn't there the night before. Later in the day, in the afternoon, I'm in the backyard playing with my friend from across the street who's a year younger than me. So I'm 7 again and he's 6. And we're climbing trees in my backyard when this mist rolls into the backyard very slowly. At first, I thought it was smoke, but it was like a fog machine, very light and cool. And inside this mist was a gray guy, one of the little gray guys, and telepathically asked me, "Are you okay?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm fine." And then he seemed satisfied. And then he continued to walk the mist all around him. And he walked into the neighbor's yard and kept going until I couldn't see the mist any longer. My friend, whom I'm still in touch with, remembers it still clearly that we were in the backyard and this mist sort of on its own just drove through the, essentially through the backyard. He didn't get to see the little gray guy within the mist, but he does remember the mist. And then I had a UFO sighting at 9, another experience at 10 of this strange being at the foot of my bed. And then in my teen years, boom, I was sometimes being taken multiple times a week. And that lasted for several years, probably until I was about 18 or 19. I was being regularly, very regularly taken. And their intent seemed to be all physical stuff, and at least from my side of it. And I even set up sort of an obstacle course in my bedroom to try to hamper them, hinder them, and it didn't seem to work at all. And then this is the point when I was very late in my high school experience that they brought me on board before another entity that was unlike either the 3-foot tall grays or 5-foot tall grays. This being was a mantis. I called it a mantis at the time, which I think is very interesting, because when I started to hear other people's experience, they all call this being the mantis. And it did, that just was a trip to me that everyone called it the same thing that I had coined for myself. And yeah, this thing was about 7 feet tall. Looked just like a praying mantis wearing a cheap wizard costume or graduation gown. Not really snazzy dressers, these mantises, but he had this very intense energy about him. Very concentrated, compact, just very powerful. And it was difficult to be around him. And he says to me, just go along with the program. And he's like, you've been resisting, go along with the program and you'll get to see the benefits. And that was about it. And then they walked me out. At the time, being in high school, the closest analogy I could make from the time is that I got brought to the principal's office and sort of tried to scare me straight about this. And I still resisted them. And then, it was when I got into my late teens and early 20s, they started to step back a little bit and give me some respect. And there was sort of an exchange at that point that wasn't there before. Prior to that, they were pretty much just telling me what to do. Since that goes into the next sort of phase in my life of material, I'll pause for a moment just in case there was anything you wanted to say, ask, or anything for clarification or.
Yeah, thank you. So there's a few things here. First of all, I mean, I talk to experiencers multiple times a week. I mean, I vet callers, if I feel like they're you just kind of get a sense of people for after a while. Probably a little less than half of the people I speak to, sometimes for 2-3 hours a night. I mean, they'll never go public. I'll never ask them to go public, of course. But if anything, I'm just gaining more information. However, your recall seems to be quite a bit better than your average experience. Would you agree?
Oh, that is true. And I have been regressed. At this point, gosh, I don't know, maybe it's a dozen times now. But in the early 90s, I had some regression sessions about much of this. The thing at age two, I remembered, you know, quite clearly, and, you know, other things I remembered, but regression helped me enhance it and correct details that were actually incorrect. Like a little thing I'll mention, when I was two and I got regressed on that, I thought it was strange that under hypnosis, my crib looked differently than I remembered it. But then when I told my folks about the experience, they said that it was as I recalled it under hypnosis. Like, I wanted to remember it wrong the way I thought I had remembered it, but hypnosis wouldn't let me. They're like, no, your crib didn't look like that. It looked exactly like this. And when I saw it, I'm like, oh my gosh, this matched what I saw under hypnosis, even though I thought I had recalled it looking different. So that to me was, that was my first regression session. I'm like, oh wow. So there is something to this that, you know, under hypnosis, I'm not confabulating things. If there are small details of my actual recall, hypnosis is actually clarifying it. And so that was really something for me to discover.
Hmm. Yeah, I wrote a few things down here. I'll try not to ask too many. Maybe this is a better one off air. And if you don't want to say it publicly, that's totally fine. Do you know any good regressionist hypnotherapists in the state of Michigan by chance?
We work with Mary Bassett, who actually she lives in Nashville, Michigan, mm-hmm. which is kind of halfway between Grand Rapids and Lansing. And after a conversation with her, if she agrees to see you, she'll do it for free. Mm-hmm. And as long as you go to her home. And then she has a podcast of her own. And if you're agreeable, she can sometimes play clips of your recorded regression. And if you're not cool with that, then she doesn't go that route and you just have a session with her.
That's funny that we're talking about Mary. She's actually coming on in about 3 weeks, or a little less than 3 weeks, on the 17th. Very cool. I did not know. I knew that she did that. I didn't know. I'll have to look that up. I don't think that's terribly far from where I live. As I mentioned before, I'm in a city called Brighton, which is, for anybody out of state, is not far from Ann Arbor. So, and then I guess we can get back into it. I just don't want to overwhelm you with too many questions. If I had to sneak a quick one in, again, for our new listeners, a lot of experiencers seem to see owls. I myself have an owl downstairs that I rescued yesterday and I'm bringing to the Howell Nature Center. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that. I'm bringing it there so they can rehab it and get it back. So what's odd is the first time I've ever held an owl was at Renaissance Festival. This was 2012, September 28th. I picked up that owl on September 28th, exactly to the day, 11 years later. I find that to be odd. And then another strange synchronicity, I suppose you could call it, would be that morning, well before I knew about the owl, of course, I created a t-shirt for the podcast and it just said, Aliens, UFOs, Ghost Stories Podcast. But in between the writing was a huge owl. So very strange, really, really strange. So have you ever had any experiences with owls whatsoever?
Yeah. First of all, I'll point out, it's kind of funny. There was, I did a newsletter that was about 10 years ago. Was it 20 years ago now? I've been doing this for a while. I think it was more like 10 years ago. And I selected this owl that I did in art class in elementary school. I thought it was still really cool. And I had the owl be the logo for it. And this is before I started hearing of this owl connection. I had heard that owls were sometimes screen memories for people seeing grays, but I wasn't aware at that time of the sort of the depth of it. And More recent stuff that has happened to me involved this owl. I hear this owl outside every once in a while. It's very rare that I get to see it, but there is an owl in my neighborhood. And there is a story about me and an owl that actually made it into Mike Clellan's The Messengers. And that was kind of funny. I was on a nature trail, and right in front of me, this shaggy sort of brown thing fell right in front of my face. And I thought it was a beehive at first, based upon the shape of it. And I'm like, oh no, this beehive's about to drop on me. But right when I got to face level, boom, these wings popped out and it flew straight in front of me down the path. And oh, that woke me up.
Yeah, I can only imagine. I can't really go into it. If maybe perhaps off air, I've been meaning to have a conversation with someone specifically from MUFON, from the state of Michigan. And I think this would be better off air because our listeners have heard it too much. But to say it briefly, my wife, when she was 7 in Dearborn, Michigan, saw an oversized owl right outside her house, oversized, like 3-4 feet tall. And after meditating and trying to get answers, telepathically, of course, one time I just said, hey, you know, can you show me what you look like? And it appeared, you know, I was laying, well, I guess you can't see me anymore, but right behind me is our queen size bed. And I was laying in it, of course. It was 2 in the morning, couldn't sleep. And so it was pitch black in the room. So I like to say that it was in my mind's eye, if that makes sense. I was meditating with my eyes closed. And, you know, some people say that when their eyes are closed and you're meditating, sometimes you can get symbols. I've never had that. But what did happen was, after asking essentially, like, can you please show me what you look like? I just started seeing feathers, like owl feathers. And once it came to a full picture, it was just an owl and it wouldn't look at me. It was facing the opposite direction. It was facing my window. And then when it realized that I wasn't freaking out, it slowly turned its head like this. And when it did, its eyes were not circular. I'm not aware of any owls that have any other shape other than circles. It seemed to be much larger than a regular owl, of course. And it had like a gray white, not like a snow owl, it's like a grayish white feathers. And then after it turned its head, I saw that it had shoulders like a man, like a very skinny man. And then in my head, I start going, our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be your name. My kingdom come, thy will be done, because I got scared. And then I've never asked it to show it's me again, you know. And I just think it's odd that my wife at 7 years old in Dearborn, and then myself at 35 years old, had essentially the same experience in a sense. And now we have an owl that we're rehabbing outside. It's very odd. I work for a company. I can't say what company. I have to say very vague here. But I do work for a company, and we get calls relating to animals. So the person who started the company has been doing this for 19 years, and he's been on his own working for himself for about 14. And extremely successful business. And all the time that he's ever done it, I was working for the company for a little over a week, and I took a phone call, and they're asking about whether or not we can do a live extraction on an owl. I didn't know that one. I knew all the other stuff. I call them. I go, hey, blank, do we do live extractions for owls? And he kind of chuckled. He goes, are you messing with me? Like, no, I just got a call from somebody who's got one like on their porch. They won't leave them alone. They think it's injured. He goes, no. I'm like, we can't do a price, or we can't help these people out or anything. He's like, we don't do that. Tell them to call DNR. So forgot about it. I asked the other guy who answers phone for the company. I was like, you ever get something about owls? And again, he was like, absolutely not. Did you get one? I was like, yeah, I did. Then, you know, I don't know how long they'd been. 6 weeks later, like a couple days ago, I get a phone call. Somebody from Allen Park. For people who are out of state, that's where the Detroit Lions practice, I believe. And she said, hey, you know, we have an injured owl in our backyard. Can you guys help us out? And again, I call the owner and he's like, are you serious? He's like, how have I been in this industry for nearly 20 years and I've never got one, and you got two in less than 2 months? I swear, I'm not messing around. I was like, is it okay if I just go pick this thing up and take it to Howell Nature Center so it doesn't die? He's like, that's fine. So sorry about going off for that long. I have this very strange connection to owls. I've meditated and had them fly over my head, just one. And then I've also meditated asking for a sign, and I just said, I want to hear an owl. And then 30 feet outside of my back door, an owl that wasn't there, it was extremely loud. It essentially sounded like, woo, woo, woo. And it did it for a very long time. And I said telepathically, when I turn my back, I want you to stop. It stops entirely. And when I said, when I turn back around, I want you to do it again. And it did. And this went on for some time. And it wasn't there. There was no owl. My wife verified it, and an experiencer friend, I called him, and he, before he even said hello, he's like, is that an owl? So I had two people back it up for me. So, but enough about that. Let's get back to you, Bill.
At PackUp, our goal is to get people outside faster and with more confidence while increasing safety and enjoyment in the outdoors. Forgetting a piece of gear might lead to a funny story later, but it could also be life-threatening. Whether you are a complete novice or an experienced multi-sport adventurer, PackUp takes the guesswork out of trip preparation by creating unique, customizable packing lists for every trip based on your activities and accommodations. You can collaborate with others on group trips and manage all your gear in your own personalized gear closet. Learn more at getpackup.com.
So, Bill, I'd really like to talk a little bit more about your experiences, say maybe in the teens. I think we've already covered quite a bit, before 10. How about late teens, early 20s? How did it kind of evolve?
So first of all, in my family, amongst my older brothers, the phenomena runs on my mom's side of the family. And with my four older brothers, the youngest of them is still 6 years older than me, and then they're all about a year apart or so. The two oldest brothers I have, the three of us could go toe-to-toe in a crazy story contest. I mean, just full-on experiences all through our lives. The two brothers in between us, nothing. Zero. And which is equally strange in the context. So when I was little, they were told by my parents not to share too much about their own experiences. And they were sympathetic to me when I would tell what happened, but they didn't really share back until I got into my early teens. And then I started to realize, like, oh, wow, you know, this isn't just me. This is happening too. It's a bigger thing. I heard some of the stories about my cousins and all of this. I'm like, wow. But I didn't really have a structure to put it into at that time. When I started to hear the stories from my brothers, it was the early 80s. And I was not sure. I'm like, these are strange stories. What are these beings that are visiting me? Close Encounters had come out. But for some reason, it never left any sort of impression on me, like, oh, this is what's happening to me. To me, it was just like a fictional film. And when I saw, a lot of people have this, their communion moment, where they see the cover of Whitley Strieber's Communion, and it triggers them. And so I remember I walked into the bookstore. I wanted to say it was Walden Books was the name of the place at the time. And yeah, I saw the book there and it freaked me out. I didn't expect to see that, and it really affected me. And I asked for it for, was it Christmas? Yeah, I asked for it for Christmas and I got it. And I read the book just in a matter of days. I was just like, oh my gosh, and that happened to me, and that happened to me, and that happened to me. And I'm like, oh, and that didn't happen to me. Oh, wait, but that happened to me. And I got to the end, and I was hoping that there would be something to help me. to make me feel better. And the best I could get out of it was that it happened to other people too. And now I had something of a context to put many of my experiences in. Other stuff fell outside of this, the weird poltergeist stuff. And I actually eventually did see an actual apparition, a ghost. But so much of what was happening to me did fit into this context. And then the next book, my birthday was a few months later, and Transformation came out, Strieber's second book. And I asked for that, and I read that. No. Okay. Is it different? It's important enough. I got Transformation for Christmas because of the timing of it. Okay. So I got it for Christmas, and as I'm reading through the book and saying, yes, this happened to me, though this didn't happen to me, it comes to a part where Whitley says, he gets this message in his head, come to the park. And he does, and there's a being there. And I'm like, well, that's something that's never happened to me. And then right then I felt this thought pop into my head, like it was pushed there. Could some people, the way they describe the term download, fits this sort of category, an external thought that plugs into your head. It said, finish the book and we will prove to you that we exist. And so while I had read Communion very quickly, I was already reading Transformation very slowly because I dreaded what revelation the next chapter would give me about the reality of what I was going through. And so then I got to the point after that message, which didn't go away. I got to the point where I got to the very last chapter and said, I am not ready to finish this book. And I set it aside, and I one night had a dream that I finished the book. Very strange to have a dream where you're reading a book and you finish it. And I did. So when I woke up, I'm like, okay, that means today is the day that I finished reading this. And I did. I read the last chapter. And from that, and it was early in the morning that I read it. And the whole rest of the day, I'm like, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? Something's going to happen. I know something's going to happen. I don't know what. And I didn't want to be alone at all that day. And I made sure I was around people all day. And that night went out with friends, and me and two buddies were in his Chevette, and we parked in front of another person's house, a friend of ours, waiting for her to get home from work. And while we're sitting there parked in this car, it's 9 o'clock. It's in Sterling Heights, Michigan. It's February, so it's dark. This blue ball of light about the size of a car, about the height of two telephone poles up, slowly moves over the car. It's sort of disc-shaped. I would actually describe it more like a football. And it moved across like somebody threw a football. It was very slow, very large, just drifted over the car. And then when that disappeared, a white ball of light came and zigzagged all over the sky. And then when that disappeared, a red ball of light appeared in the center of the sky, grew to the size of about a full moon, which is quite large, and then shrank and disappeared. We all three saw it, all agreeing exactly what it was that we saw. And it gets a little weirder in that the day after I go into work, and well, first of all, I'm like, okay, finish the book. We'll prove to you that we exist. I'm like, that's a pretty good show. I'm on board, excuse the pun now. I get it. You've proven that you exist. But so it gets weirder when the next day I go into work and I go up to my coworker and I said, hey, you'll never guess what I saw last night. And she goes, oh, did you see the UFO? And that is not what I expected to hear from her. And she says, our maintenance guy at the place, he saw it, UFO last night. So I went and I said, Carl, did you see anything last night of interest? He's like, yeah, this blue ball of light did this sort of wobbly zigzag down my street really slowly last night. And he lives in Detroit and a whole different city several miles away. And then I go back to my original coworker and she's crying. And I'm like, oh, no, what happened? Because I was only gone a few minutes. And she goes, all this talk of UFOs reminds me of something that happened when I was young. said she grew up in Tennessee, and in she was elementary age. I forget exactly how old, but I know she was a little girl at the time. She's in the back seat of a car with her sister. Her parents are in the front. And as they're driving down some dirt road somewhere, they see a disc parked on the side of the road with lights around it. She said it was about 30 feet in diameter. And then as they pull up to it, you know, she and her sister and her mom are all like freaking out. And the dad's like, huh, let me take a look at that. And they're like, no, you're not going to stop and take a look at it. Get out of here. And so they started screaming until he agreed to just drive on and keep going. And she said that affected her so much that every once in a while she thinks of it and she gets overwhelmed. And so my takeaway from that is it started a phase in my life where the beings were responsive. It wasn't just, you know, it wasn't just coming to me at 2 a.m. like, I know you got school tomorrow, but we got stuff. You know, you're coming with us. There was sort of a responsiveness to it. And shortly after that, a couple interesting episodes happened where I was in my house in the kitchen at about 3 a.m. I became quite a night owl at that point. I guess, excuse the pun with the owls, but because I did not want to go to sleep. I wanted to stay up as late as possible. And now that I could, I was just fresh out of high school. I'm like, I'm staying up as late as I can. And so I'm in the kitchen and I sense them in the backyard. I know they're back there. The very distinct energy they have, the feeling that they're back there. I'm like, oh gosh, I don't want to deal with this. And so I said to them, like, if you're out there, if you're back there, I don't want to see you. Call me on the phone and I'll answer. And then the phone rang, which I did not expect. And so I sat for about 5 minutes. I'm like, well, that's weird. Right. So I went and I eventually picked up the phone and got a dial tone. And then the feeling of presence dissipated. It felt like they had left. The next day, I'm in the backyard saying, why didn't I just answer that phone right away? You know, if that ever happens again, I'm going to get that phone right away. And sure enough, the next summer, I'm in the kitchen. It's about 3 a.m. I get that sensation there in the backyard. And I said, again, if you're here, I don't want to see you. Call me on the phone. This time I'll pick up. And yeah, the phone rang. And this time I dashed right for the phone. No hesitation. Picked it up, also got a dial tone. And then the feeling of presence dissipated a little bit, but not completely. It was a lot worse before the call, but I didn't get the sensation that they were necessarily gone. And I wanted some sort of company at that point, somebody with me. And so the family dog was upstairs in my parents' room. And so I got her to come out of the room with me. But when I did that, she thought, oh, we're going for a walk. All right, let's do this. And so she's like running around by the front door and then she's starting to whine and she's little barks. I'm like, oh no. I'm like, you know, I wanted people with me, but not like this. And so, I said, okay, you know, from what I remembered at that point, what limited knowledge I had is that animals are supposed to be really sensitive to stuff like this. And she didn't seem concerned at all. So I thought, well, maybe they are gone and maybe it's just some residual thing. So I certainly wasn't going to go towards the backyard. So we went out the front and to the corner of the street. And I'm looking around really anxiously, really nervously. She couldn't care less what's going on. And then I look above my house and I notice that in the whole of the sky, there's one cloud and it's disc shaped, but it's a cloud. It's got the very wispy clear and it's like lit from within. And I'm like, that's a very strange looking cloud, but it's a cloud, right? And then I start to see it move back. And then boom, it shot off like at a really incredible speed. And then, I stayed awake until daylight, but I really think that was them and their exit. I think they wanted to demonstrate that they were there and that they respected my request not to bother me. And so I thought, well, that shows a lot of restraint. For all I know, they had taken me and I didn't, you know, I had some missing time, but I don't think I did. I don't think I lost any time from it. And there would be other examples. And I mean, it's the whole course of my second book that I talk about the 20s. They took a very deep interest in my life. They were very interested in who I was dating, and just minor details of my life, which seems absurd. You take a phenomena that is like this, which is incredible, fantastic to begin with, and then you add these little things that they, you know, as you describe in some of your owl things, like, you know, these are situations that are important to us personally, but how are these moments in our lives and these synchronicities important to them? Why is what happens, why are the small details in our lives important to them? And still, I'm not entirely sure how to answer that, but yeah, they were for about 5 years, and I think actually even longer than that, they would just nudge me a little bit this way and that way in my life, come to me at moments that were big moments of change in my life. And, you know, I never got the feeling that they went away. But after I turned like about 30, the number of experiences dropped precipitously. And now it's rare. It's very rare for me to have something happen. And I take it, it's because they're satisfied with whatever is going on in my life. In terms of the biological stuff, I think I've passed their point of interest for that sort of thing. And but yeah, they haven't 100% gone away.
If you don't mind me asking, Bill, my last experience, I mean, the owl stuff, that's a whole nother thing. But the last memory I have really of something coming into my reality, so to speak, was a year and a half ago. And our listeners already know that story. If you don't, you know, go back or forward. I'm not sure when we're going to release this one. I did our very first premiere episode for Patreon. We've done this for nearly 2 years now, and we haven't made a dime. And that's not what we set out to do. We set out to help educate myself and our young listeners on the subject. But if you guys do want to hear that story of the last time they came into the room, please go back and listen to the Patreon episode. It's the very first one. And, you know, even if it's $1 or $3, I mean, it's anything helps us keep this little show going. But so that was a year and a half ago. What's the last thing that you remember? As far as just any experience whatsoever with the ET?
You know, I am comfortable talking about stuff that has happened several years ago. And I became a father and I have a couple kids now, and it's tough for me to talk about recent stuff at this moment. So, I mean, I will say that I've seen some strange lights in the sky with some sort of recurrence. And they tend to have like sort of a golden hue to them. They move very gracefully, sometimes do a horseshoe or other patterns in the sky. And I feel open about talking about that type of stuff. But
by all means,
one day I'll talk about the other stuff. It's just not the time for me to be able to do that.
Sure. Yeah, one thing, and again, this is completely unrelated, just to kind of reiterate what you're saying, Bill, is that it took me a long time to talk publicly about a baby presentation. Are you familiar with that terminology? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it took me a long time to even accept that it was real. My sister and I both had one separately, of course, two different occasions. So anyway, you said biological stuff stopping, were you ever under the impression that they might have been taking some sort of biological samples?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll just leave it there. There's a couple other questions. I'm curious, I know that you've attended some CE5s, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Ever in the state of Michigan?
Yeah, there in Brighton, at the local park. It might have been four that I've done.
Okay. Are you familiar with Kimberly Marie? I believe she, I just got into connection with her through Deb Schottke. You know Debs? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she kind of hooked us up, and my sister and I, my sister's not public, so I try not to say her name. She hasn't gone public, but she is going to attend it with me tonight. And just like you were mentioning earlier, you know, you said you had two brothers where it's just nothing. I have four sisters, and the only one with any recall whatsoever is my older sister and I, who ironically, you know, we shared that bedroom all those years ago. Another detail that was very strange that Dolly knew was that we lived in a trailer park. She goes, outside of Detroit? I'm like, yeah. It's an impossibility. I certainly never talked about that on a podcast. How she would have known that is nearly impossible. So, and then if you don't mind me asking, I think that we probably should wrap up here pretty soon. I try to keep these around an hour. I did notice that when they start hitting that hour and a half, 2 hour mark, people start tuning out. I guess, do you have any questions for me before I ask you a final question?
No. Just since you had brought up Kimberly. So MUFON, the Michigan MUFON chapter, we've done this a couple times, sort of partnered with their group and essentially attended their event. So our May meeting of this year was Kimberly explaining the protocols and some of the interesting things that have happened to her during these sky watches. And then shortly after in June, we went out and did one. And so it's been a number of years that I've done them. I do about one a year, and I know they do several. My thing, and I don't mean to stir anything up, but there's a conflict of interest with me actually calling it a CE5. So the first time that I'd heard anybody put those two letters and that number together was Jacques Vallée in his 1990 book Confrontations. And so we're going back more than 30 years. And so he had an idea to extend the Hynek scale, you know, of close encounters. Close encounter for the first kind, very close up sighting within 500 feet. Close encounter second kind, leave some sort of physical mark. Close encounter the third time, you see an entity. And then that's where Hynek had stopped. And then Vallée extended it with a CE4 being an abduction. A person goes on board, and then a CE5 was a physical injury or healing associated with it. And to me, that is the next reasonable step in this. To do an orchestrated skywatch with a good intention and effort to bring down beings. You know, if the most successful CE5 is going to be a CE4. So, and most people count a successful CE5 as a flyby. And so that term is a very clever marketing term for what it's called. I have deep respect for it. I've done it. It's if nothing else, it's a deeply meditative evening. And it's great to skywatch. And I saw something at one in outside of Vegas a few years back. I don't know. It's just that term was already sort of taken in a way that I think was the most logical use of that term. So I don't know what else to call these types of skywatches, I don't know, whenever I hear CE5, I think about when I was new to the organization. And since I joined in 93, you know, it's from this point of 30 some years in the organization, I that's what I know it as.
Yeah, that's fair. This will actually be my first one I've ever attended, and I'm excited. If I could just get it down to one or two more questions here, maybe another 3 to 5 minutes.
And they're great. They're great events, and she's wonderful.
She really is. Sorry to interject. So what happened is so odd. The very first time I physically meet her, I drive to Allen Park. I pick up an owl. I have to drive straight to a place called Sushi Zen, outstanding sushi place in my hometown. And so I pull up at exactly 7:30, exactly when we're supposed to eat. You know, I was so excited to meet Kimberly that, and the owl was fine, guys. It was in a cage with blankets. You know, it wasn't crazy hot, it wasn't crazy cold. And we finished eating at the sushi place. And then it's a weird synchronicity to me that the very first time I ever meet this woman, it was moments after I caught an owl to rehab it. So just a very strange night, I suppose.
Okay, so here I am at Sushi Zen a few years ago. I think it was probably pre-COVID. And I'm with a friend who's deep into the community, deep into the phenomena. And she walks in at the same exact place that you're talking about. And then she and my friend start talking, and they've remained connected ever since by some chance meeting of her walking into that exact restaurant.
Man, very strange. Everything's been so strangely.
So yeah, certainly ask her about it. Yeah.
Yeah, I will. And let's do another 2 minutes here. Are you familiar with a Dr. Robert Scheip? He's from LA. He, you know, I was just talking to him for a long time. He has a really great YouTube channel. I'll put that in the show notes along with Bill's books, of course, and probably a MUFON link, you know, if you did want to, you know, report something, of course. He essentially, long story short, he accrued a lot of money. He was a pharmacist who figured out a way to like mail medicine to people, sold the company. But he used to go to Dr. Stephen Greer's lectures. In fact, this is before Dr. Stephen Greer started doing anything to do with aliens, just strictly medical. And so it's just this weird little loop of where, you know, not only did Dr. Scheip know Dave Emmons and a few others, you know, Knapp that I've been talking to here and there, not a lot, by the way. And then he, of course, knew Dr. Greer, and Kimberly used to work directly beside Greer. It's just everything. It's such a small world, this whole community, you know. Everybody seems to kind of know each other, so.
Wild, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That did, when you mentioned that weird chance meeting at Sushi Zen, and of all places, it's that exact same place.
Very odd. But Bill, I sincerely appreciate your time. I don't want to hold you up. It is Saturday after all. There is so much stuff that we didn't really get to get into, but you have an open invitation. You know, I'm very excited to be meeting people from, I mean, you represent the whole entire state. That's, you know, for you to come out and get that time. Yeah. In fact, you were one of the youngest ever to take that position, right? I mean, you were relatively young, weren't you?
Yeah, I was just barely into my 30s. I'm actually 52 now, and I'm still younger than most of the people in MUFON, I think. and I've been a member for 30 years.
Wow. Yeah, so guys, I strongly encourage you guys to please go to the show notes. Please click the links to his books. Had I planned it a little better, are you on Audible by chance?
Oh no, my book is not yet. Okay. I started in earnest to record it, and life, just so much life stuff.
No, I
did. I never made it very far.
So once I realized they weren't going to come until like Monday, through Amazon, I panicked and I started looking for your Audible, but instead I just crammed about four interviews, you know, 4 days in a row, and I listened to a couple twice over. So guys, I strongly encourage you to go, please hit the links below, look at his books. If you think that you might have seen a craft or may even be an experiencer, click that MUFON link. And yeah, I mean, if you guys have enjoyed this podcast over the years, we just started to monetize it. It really just is a hobby, but if I could focus more intensely on this, I might be able to do a couple more episodes a week. And, you know, a lot of times, Bill, we're not bringing on people who are, you know, representing MUFON. It's more or less just people kind of sharing their stories.
That's great.
Yeah. It's just kind of getting off their chest. And I think it's, I mean, that's why I started mine, was because I would listen to these and it'd make me feel a little better. So that's all we're doing, is we're trying to bring people on and, people who aren't typically public, I suppose, is what I'm trying to say.
No, that's perfect. That's where the attention really needs to be.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate your time, Bill. You have an open invitation anytime. You'd like to come on. Yeah, I'd be honored. And guys, get ready for Mary Bassett in mid-October. I'm going to be on Lightgate with Preston Dennett and Dolly Safran, and we got a lot of Denise Stoners coming on. I'm sure there's quite a bit more, but we'll review that next week. And Bill, I hope you have a great weekend.
Thanks, you too.
If you guys enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review. It helps a lot. If you can't afford to subscribe, which is just anything you think it's worth, a dollar, $3, $5, leaving us a review helps us out tremendously. Thanks. Today's outro is Calling All Hybrids by Skits the PLK. If you like his stuff, go to schizomusic.com. I'ma do this for my hybrids, yeah. From a different world, looking to provide us with knowledge, wishing that we all just stop the violence. They try to show us how to build, but we always demolish. Yeah. Listen, I'm here to reach out to you. You can ask me anything, I'll never lie to you. If you came in from above, then I'ma ride for you. If you're only spreading love, then I would die for you. Huh? That's crazy, right? You can call it what you want, but through the weeds, we getting blunt. It isn't time to play around or go to lunch, when the ops could destroy the whole planet in a month. I'm the kind of contactee that'll contact any kind being with a compact beam. Yeah. Just to see the starship gleam in the middle of the night with my team. If you feel without me, then you might be a hybrid. Bare minimum, a contactee. Yeah. If you know you a hybrid, feel free to come and contact me. Yeah. Baby, I'm a star seed. Yeah. Here to give you the support that y'all seek. If you know you a hybrid, give me the knowledge that humanity needs. Yeah. You might be a hybrid. Bare minimum, a contactee. For the love of it, you can love in your spirit. I guess it's only human to sit and stew in your feelings. So I think we need a hybrid to come and show us the healing. Techniques used by the ancient ones through vibration. We can meditate for fun. Who would have thought a couple breaths could replace a gun? Let's get mindful. Let the grace overrun the streets till it reaches every mind that shines like me. I'm living for it, but I swear that I'm dying to see the hybrids coming forth with honesty. To let us know we're not alone in this odyssey. Tell the deep state that I need an apology. For suppressing technology and using taxes as an excuse for robbing me. If it bothers you just like it bothers me. Then you might be a hybrid. Bare minimum, a contactee. If you know you a hybrid, feel free to come and contact me. Baby, I'm a star seed. I'm here to give you the support that y'all seek. If you know you a hybrid, give me the knowledge that humanity needs. Instead of a bridge, it's a portal. love and light. Today's intro was a clipping from an artist named Smol, S-M-O-L, and the song is called Playground, featuring Alan Watts, and here's the full version.
One of the most interesting things in the world, this is a yoga, this is a way of realization. Try and imagine what it will be like to go to sleep and never wake up. Think about that. It's one of the great wonders of life. What will it be like to go to sleep and never wake up? And if you think long enough about that, something will happen to you. Throughout all galaxies, it doesn't make any difference. You are all of them. And when they come into being, that's you coming into being. You know that very well. Thank you.